ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're listening to ABC RM Breakfast, where it's 14 minutes to 7.
If healthy living is your thing, the ABC Listen app has all the podcasts. Try the health report.
These are ultra-processed products, and if you compare the calories...
You might also like What's That Rash?
You're talking about zits.
Teenagers love to go...
Or Life Matters.
Love online after 50.
It took me 18 months to download my first dating app.
Get your health kicks anywhere, anytime with the ABC Listen app.
Higher than expected inflation figures released yesterday show the cost of living crisis is continuing to bite and puts more pressure on the Reserve Bank, with some analysts more pessimistic about whether the RBA can lower rates anytime this year. It's now just weeks before the Albanese government unveils its third budget, and those numbers will have an impact on what they're able to deliver and the way that they're framing the budget. Sherelle Murphy is Chief Economist and EY Oceania at EY Oceania. And Sol Eslake is an independent economist, and they join us together for a panel. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Patricia. Good morning, Sherelle.
I want to start with you and Sherelle, if we can. The central question for many households right now is, what does it mean for interest rates?
Well, I think that that this just reinforces our concerns that the Reserve Bank was not really close to cutting interest rates this year. It's definitely looking like a 2025 proposition at best, and there is certainly enough concern in these numbers for the Reserve Bank to really be cautious as it looks forward.
What's your take on that, Sol?
Well, I agree with Sherelle. I've thought since November last year that the Reserve Bank wouldn't be cutting interest rates in 2024 and that we'd have to wait until February 2025 at the earliest to see interest rates begin to come down here, even if they start coming down sooner than that in other comparable countries. And that prospect seems to have receded a bit in recent weeks as well. I've had the view since late last year that the Reserve Bank had consciously decided to tolerate inflation being above its target for longer than its peers in other countries were willing to tolerate inflation being above their slightly more demanding targets, in order to preserve as much as they could of the unexpected gains that had been made in 2021 and 2022. Two, in reducing unemployment and underemployment to hitherto unthinkable levels. And that was confirmed by the minutes of the March meeting of the Reserve Bank Board that were released just over 2 weeks ago. But it follows from the fact that the Reserve Bank was later to start raising rates than its peers, and that it's raised rates by less than its peers. And just to remind there, our Reserve Bank's cash rate of 4.35% compares with 5% in the UK and Canada, 5.38% in the US, and 5.5% in New Zealand. So quickly as our Reserve Bank has raised rates by our own historical standards, it's raised them by less than its peers. So given all that, it's always stood to reason to me that the Reserve Bank would be slower to start cutting rates than its peers. And that's even before you start to factor in the fact that from the 1st of July this year, Australian households will be getting income tax cuts that are equivalent in terms of their impact on aggregate household cash flows to two 25 basis point reductions in interest rates. So for me, yesterday's figures simply confirm what I had long expected, that hopes of rates being cut in 2024 were never really all that realistic.
So we were wrong the whole time, Sherelle, in thinking perhaps by the end of the year there would be rate cuts again.
Look, I think so. And you know, our, like Sol, our expectation was that wouldn't be the case, although we were very much out of consensus with the market, which yesterday moved quite significantly. Both financial market pricing and a number of economists in the market really pushed back their expectations too. Maybe not necessarily until 2024, into 2025, but certainly they added a few months on to their expectations of the first rate cut. I agree with Sol that, you know, we do have tax cuts obviously coming, which will add more income back into the disposable income back into the household sector. Although I would also note that the increase in tax paid by the household sector has been increasing a lot. So to some extent, it does just give back, you know, some of what's just been taken out. So just to put a couple of numbers around that, in 2023, the household sector paid nearly $47 billion more in income tax than in 2022. And these tax cuts are worth about $23 billion. So it is a factor, but I think, you know, that was already, I guess, just replacing some of what had been taken out.
So I imagine this is all putting a lot of pressure on the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, as he constructs his federal budget to be delivered mid-May. Saul, what does it mean for the design of the budget?
Well, it makes it a little more tricky than it already was. On the one hand, the higher-than-expected inflation number that we got yesterday probably adds to the political pressure the government's under to provide more cost of living relief. That's in addition to the income tax cuts that Sherelle just mentioned and the indexation of pensions and benefits for the full CPI increases that occur every March and September. There'll be some political pressure to do more. On the other hand, of course, it also increases the risks associated with potentially doing too much by way of providing additional cash to households that they in turn spend. So I think the government has to draw a fine balance, as it did last year. I think the cost of living relief measures that were included in last year's budgets were both tightly targeted to people who were in greatest need of assistance with cost of living pressures, but also cleverly structured to have an impact on the measured inflation rate of things like childcare, electricity, and rents. And we saw that again in yesterday's numbers, where the increases that were included in the CPI in things like electricity prices and rents were lower than they would have been had it not been for measures that were included in last year's budget. So I hope and I'd expect that the government will be thinking along similar lines as it puts the finishing touches on next month's budget.
Sherelle, how do you see it?
Look, I certainly think that the atmospherics, if you like, have changed with this number. There was the expectation in the market, as we were talking about, that the inflation problem was kind of dissipating, and we had been seeing those gradual moves down in the CPI. But this does change that, especially with the market pricing and economists' expectations across the market pushing that rate cut expectation out. And the other thing is that the government has already made a few pretty large decisions in terms of spending, including particularly defence. Now, defence obviously doesn't hit the household sector in the short term, but it's not to say it's not stimulatory for the economy. It does have trickle-down effects. And presumably the future Made in Australia policy will have some perhaps tax concessions, perhaps subsidies in there, which also will be quite stimulatory to the sectors which are already, I guess, holding up the best. So when you add that together with these numbers, I do think that the opportunity for any discretionary additional spending by the government is now very, very limited.
It is very limited, which I know you're both economists. The politics isn't your problem. But given Australians are under so much pressure with cost of living, Saul, this is a pretty wicked problem.
Well, it is. And that's why I acknowledged in answer to your previous question that yesterday's numbers do increase the political pressure on the government to provide cost of living relief. And all I can say is that while I understand and accept that political reality, and I'm not seeking to challenge it, the government does really need to be careful in ensuring that whatever cost of living relief it does provide over and above the tax cuts and the measures that were put in place in last year's budget are directed towards people who really need it. And I think you can identify those. It's not pensioners and beneficiaries necessarily, because to remind, they are fully compensated for increases in the CPI by the semi-annual indexation of their pensions and benefits every March and September. But rather it's people on low wages, other than those who are getting specific wage increases courtesy of the Fair Work Commission, such as those in aged care, but other people on very low wages are being hard hit by cost of living pressures. People with big mortgages are being hit by cost of living pressures. And another group that's being hard hit by high inflation are, of course, students who are having their HECS and HELP debts indexed by much bigger factors than they would have expected when they were undertaking their studies. Now, if the government were, for example, to announce in the budget some relief from the indexation of student debt for recent CPI increases, I suspect that wouldn't see students going out and rushing to spend money, but it would be, I think, an appropriate recognition of the difficulties faced by a group in the population who have been hard hit by the unexpected rise in inflation and its subsequent persistence. So I think there are things that the government can do for those groups within the community that, as long as they're not over the top, won't greatly add to the risk of inflation. And if they can come up with other ways of assisting particular groups that are in genuine need, whilst also exerting direct downward pressure on measured inflation as they did last year, then I think that would be an appropriate thing to do.
And Patricia, if I could just add to the politics, I think we really should acknowledge the fact that this government has actually been pretty disciplined so far in terms of its spending. You know, we effectively do have a balanced budget at the moment, and it could have been much worse in terms of deficits. The United States, I guess, is a very useful comparison point, given their budget deficit is running at close to 6% of GDP. So, you know, we do have a government that is essentially saving the extra revenue that it's found itself with due to the strong labour market and strong commodity prices, which, of course, have boosted corporate incomes. So I guess the politics of that mean that the discipline that they've exerted over the last couple of years will be difficult to maintain. You have a number of ministers, I'm sure, who have a long list of spending priorities that they would like to put in place. But again, it's going to require that discipline to continue through the current year so that they can get the basics of the short-term macroeconomic management right to then potentially, if they do win a second term, go on with those bigger proposals.
Thank you to both of you. It's been a really interesting conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricia.
Cheryl Murphy is Chief Economist at EY Oceania, and Saul Eslake is an independent economist, both joining us to talk about those inflation figures that were concerning.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.